Chapter 1. Becoming Those Who Served. Colloquially, even in Japan, the term samurai is used as a synonym for warrior, but this is incorrect. Samurai originally had a very narrow meaning, referring to anyone who served a noble, even in a non-military capacity. Gradually, it became a title for military servants of warrior families. In fact, a warrior of elite stature in pre-17th century Japan would have been insulted to be called a samurai. There were other more common terms for warriors in classical and medieval Japan that reflected their various duties to the state, nobility, and other superiors. Most specialists in Japan and in the West used the generic term bushi, which means warrior. Warrior is a usefully ambiguous term for referring to a broad group of people before the 17th century with some military function. This includes anyone expected to provide military service to the state when needed and who received official recognition from a ruling authority to do so, such as the nobility and court in Kyoto or religious institutions. Even the term warrior is imprecise because it incorrectly suggests that warfare was this group's sole occupation. Depending on the time period and status, warriors alternatively governed, traded, farmed, painted, wrote, tutored, and engaged in shady activities. Another caution when using the term warrior is the moral value that modern people attach to the concept. The U.S. military uses warrior in its various training programs, such as Warrior Mind Training, a meditation program created for soldiers to help them cope with post-traumatic stress disorder and to prepare them for the rigors of combat. The developer used the image of the samurai to sell the program, rooting it in the ancient samurai code of self-discipline. No such code existed. Even phrases used ironically assume the existence of an authentic, admirable warrior image, for example, weekend warrior, suggesting that one is a normal, boring person during the week, but becomes some other, more primal person on the weekend. In this usage, a warrior is something one is, not an occupation one does. But throughout Japanese history, people often despised warriors. Artists and writers portrayed warriors as beasts, no better than dogs, uncouth and murderous. Warriors pillaged, looted, and sometimes murdered their way through villages. They found no love among peasants, who feared warriors because peasants suffered the most from their looting, pillaging, and collateral damage. Ironically, it was only during an age of relative peace in early modern Japan, 1600 to 1868, that common people began to admire and imitate samurai. Of course, warriors fought in combat, but in reality they spent most of their time doing something else. That could mean trying to improve their family's position in an elite society dominated by nobility, managing farmers on their estates, or, for the lowliest warriors, even engaging in occasional grift. The limit of samurai activities was determined by the definition of warrior as it changed over time. A samurai traveling back in time from the 19th century to the 9th might hardly be recognized as belonging to the same category of people. Warriors of the distant past became a source of entertainment, anxiety, and inspiration for samurai living in later times. One samurai commentator in the early 18th century, an era of peace, complained of his contemporaries, "So many men now seem to have the pulse of a woman," nothing like the real warrior men of the previous century, a time of war. In the 13th century, a Buddhist nun, Hojo Masako, invoked the legacy of her late husband Minamoto Yoritomo as a warrior founding father of sorts, who fought against a threat from an emperor in Kyoto. And let's not forget the material appeal of the past. Samurai of higher status delighted in purchasing a sword or tea bowl once owned by famous warriors. Warriors used military skills as a means of advancing their careers. Politically, they were outsiders, used as tools by powerful nobles who needed them as muscle to police their lands or to act as a check on other noble families intent on taking land by force. Much of Japan technically belonged to the emperor, Tenno, literally heavenly sovereign, who, according to ancient mythology, was descended from gods, and warriors protected the interests of the emperor's regime based in the ancient capital cities of Nara, Nagaoka, and, from 794, Kyoto. They guarded against outbreaks of violence close to the capital, attacked anyone in the provinces far from Kyoto who might threaten the regime, and campaigned against the many barbaric tribes located on the outskirts of Japan in the northeast or southwest. The term warrior typically does not include others who lived by violence, namely mercenaries, bandits, and pirates. But before the 17th century, a person's status was not so neatly defined. Some people, temporarily connected to a ruling institution, could legally participate in warfare, governance, and commerce. For example, though most warrior and royal authorities depicted pirates as violent bandits operating at sea, they sometimes engaged in warfare on behalf of a warrior regime called a shogunate, a religious institution such as a Buddhist temple, or a noble ensconced in the capital, Kyoto. They monopolized sea-based trade, established rules of conduct and expectations from people living along waterways, and wielded authority like a warlord or warrior bureaucracy. A debate about warrior origins has raged in both the Japanese and English language scholarship on pre-modern Japan, due in part to how one defines samurai. Were they simply a carryover from ancient soldiers? The earliest evidence for warrior soldiers predates written history and Japan itself. Terracotta figures, haniwa, depicting soldiers, servants, and animals, were placed outside tombs that dotted the ancient burial landscape between the 3rd and 6th centuries. The soldiers' arms and armor reflect the influence of contemporary warriors in China and the Korean kingdoms, and share a common style that shows the existence of some primitive regime that influenced mostly central and southwest Japan. Hunters and landholders from the eastern provinces, or professional warriors hired by the Kyoto court. For the sake of argument, it is safe to say that private military specialists emerged as a permanent feature in Japanese history around the 9th century, when some of them began wielding authority over others rather than serving as mere soldiers. Written evidence for warrior history can be traced to the late 8th and early 9th centuries, when the early Japanese state adopted the administrative structure of Tang Dynasty China, 618 to 907, the dominant cultural and political power in East Asia. In addition to adapting the various court titles, noble ranks, bureaucratic structures, and culture, the early Japanese sovereigns copied Tang military organization. The court required men to serve in provincial units in times of need. Though a conscript army existed on paper, most showed up only for occasional short-term assignments of up to 30 days or so. For example, to serve in the frontier guard. Most of the year they pursued their own livelihoods. Conscripts were supposed to supply their own weapons and equipment and did not spend much time training. Only officers worked in the military for long periods of time, and some historians have argued that those men were engaged in managerial work rather than intense military training or warfare. Much of the Tang administrative model was abandoned in Japan in the late 8th century and was gradually replaced over the next century and a half with specialist warriors. In the broadest terms, several different types of warriors existed beginning in the early 8th century. Most warriors did not own land per se, but received a portion of an estate's produce and the rights to collect and skim taxes from estates owned by absentee proprietors living in Kyoto. Some enjoyed relative freedom from interference by authorities in Kyoto or their representatives in the provinces. Some possessed land themselves and consigned some of that land to a non-warrior noble family in Kyoto in exchange for patronage, that is, for guarantees that others would not stake a claim on a warrior's land. Still, other warriors were themselves members of noble families, albeit of a lower rank than most of the powerful nobles who controlled the top bureaucratic positions in Kyoto. Of those, some had established local connections and alliances during a tenure as provincial governor and remained there permanently. They became warrior lords and relied on minor warrior families while maintaining connections to allies and resources in Kyoto. As the center of rule and the largest city at the time, Kyoto wielded a centripetal force on elite clans throughout Japan. People with aristocratic Kyoto lineage occupied the top social strata in provincial society. Prominent families in the countryside worried about Kyoto-appointed governors sent to monitor them, and politics in Kyoto could threaten local access to wealth. There was no single model for how these warriors organized themselves. Men might cooperate in bands of warriors connected by kinship, personal loyalty, or common enemies. Others worked together for noble families located in the capital city, provincial officials, or local strongmen. It is no surprise that the ability to fight and organize resources for a military campaign was more efficient among these specialized groups than among conscripts whose livelihoods were interrupted, not enhanced, by warfare. Eventually, the state depended on these professionalized warrior groups for police and military functions. Dependency did not mean that warriors took authority away from the state, nor was it the beginning of the end for the royalty, as was once taught. The court and nobility were still in charge. Most powerful warriors in classical and medieval Japan tended to be those who were themselves nobles and thus had little incentive to challenge the status quo of their community. Although they never achieved the upper echelons of noble ranking, many large interconnected families that dominated Japan, such as the Taira and the Minamoto, were descended from sons of emperors cast aside because they were no longer in the running for the throne. An emperor bestowed a surname upon these sons, who started clans of their own and followed careers common to noble families, serving as functionaries at court, working as important and influential Buddhist clergy, or becoming professional warriors. But not all families within a single surname, such as Minamoto, pursued the same career trajectory. One might wonder, though, did any warrior try to overthrow the emperor in Kyoto or otherwise carve out a territory of his own, independent from the center? Taira Masakado was the first would-be rebel against the court. He lived in eastern Japan, not far from present-day Tokyo, surrounded by other Taira families who controlled land in the east. Some of them served as the imperial court's representatives. Masakado had once lived in Kyoto under the court's employment, but he was largely a man of the east, a land distant from the center of political and cultural power. What began as a conflict over land among different Taira families and Masakado's own relatives, fighting that the nobility in Kyoto largely ignored, turned into an act of rebellion in 935 when Masakado retaliated against Taira men who were the emperor's representatives. Masakado might not have intended to rebel against the emperor, nor did he have a force large enough to threaten Kyoto directly, but he declared himself the new emperor in the east, a career that did not last long. He was killed by a cousin in 940. Another challenger to imperial and noble authority was Taira Kiyomori. He too was descended from an emperor and was raised in Kyoto like other aristocrats. When a succession dispute broke out within the imperial family over who would become the next emperor, Kiyomori led the forces of the victor. The losers, mostly under the control of Minamoto Yoshitomo, were sent into exile or killed. What began as a clash against forces representing noble patrons turned into a rivalry between Kiyomori and Yoshitomo. Kiyomori beat Yoshitomo and began accumulating aristocratic titles, bureaucratic posts, and provincial landholdings. By the late 1170s, he had become a real threat to imperial power. In Kyoto, he placed allies in important positions not already under his direct control, and tried, unsuccessfully, to move the capital to what is now Kobe. There, he embarked on massive building projects, including his own headquarters and ports for trade with China. He was the first warrior noble who attempted to dominate all warriors in Japan. He even put his own grandson, the child emperor Antoku, on the throne. The prince, who had been passed up for succession when young Antoku was enthroned, asked warriors to overthrow Kiyomori. That challenge started the so-called Genpei War, 1180 to 1185, which lasted longer and was geographically broader than any previous battle in Japanese history. It even outlasted Kiyomori, who died of natural causes in 1181. No broadly conceived warrior identity existed before the Genpei War. At the top of warrior society, the most powerful families were themselves part of the aristocracy. The terms warrior and nobility were not mutually exclusive. For the most part, warriors with noble surnames such as Minamoto and Taira, who resided largely in the countryside, had no incentive to fight against the imperial institution that their ancestors had helped build. Many acted as bridges between Kyoto and the countryside. They feared relatives and neighbors, and were hardly in a position to rise up against the imperial institution. At the other end of the social spectrum, the lowly, non-aristocratic soldiers and mercenaries often engaged in non-military work. Even mid-ranking warriors shared little in common with their royal betters. This situation changed to a degree after Minamoto Yoritomo emerged as the victor at the end of the Genpei War. He remained at his headquarters in Kamakura and is credited with creating the first warrior-centered regime, the Kamakura Shogunate, 1185 to 1333. Textbooks portray him as the originator of Japan's warrior identity, but that shared identity extended only to the warriors who gathered around him in Kamakura. This beginning of so-called warrior order was not orderly, nor did it involve only warriors, but it represented a first step toward a broader notion of warrior culture and identity that would develop over the subsequent centuries.